Wednesday, June 15th, 1983, 8 a.m., Hearing Room B, Public Hearing, Impossible Work Session, House Bill 2418, 2651, 2653, 2804, 2908, 2220.
Oh, where was it referred to? Considering business affairs. I don't remember which one it was. Senate Labor Committee will come to order. Senator McCoy is excused, and the clerk will call the roll.
Senator Hannon, Senator Houck.
Here.
Senator Kitzhaber.
Here.
Morning.
Good morning. For the record, Madam Chairperson, I'm State Representative Glenn Otto, representing East Multnomah County and a portion of Northern Clackamas County. House Bill 2418 is before you today, and hopefully it will receive your favorable consideration. And what it basically says is that only those people can serve on the Joint Apprenticeship Council that have knowledge of apprenticeship and represent a trade or profession that is apprenticeable. And in the past, we've had people on the council that have not possessed those qualifications. We also indicate in the bill through amendments that if a certain trade would drop out of the council, primarily because of economic reasons, that person would still be eligible to serve, because later on it could be coming back in. And what we want on the apprenticeship council is people that are knowledgeable in the trade and also in the employment activity. So we feel that this is a step toward upgrading the apprenticeship council.
Are there any questions for Representative Otto?
Madam Chairman.
Senator Brown.
Glenn, I'm having some difficulty seeing exactly, you know, where the change is being made. On page, on line 7 and 8 of the bill, the current language says apprenticeable crafts and trades who are actively participating in the apprenticeship in apprenticeship programs. Now, it sounds like that the member has to be from a craft that is then currently participating in a apprenticeship program, and all we're changing it to one where the programs are approved and registered. It sounds like the new language wouldn't even require that be participating, but have at some time in the past been approved and registered, and are not conceivably actively participating. You see what my mm-hmm. problem is? It's just a matter of language, and you can explain it to me, I'm sure.
I don't think the language change really makes that much difference.
Well, that's the old bill does, doesn't it?
Right. It does require that those people serving on the council be from an apprenticeable trade or craft.
What does the bill do? Those are the three changes. Or is it the key change down on line 16 and 17? But where's the amendment that the bill addresses?
Well, on line 17, each member shall be appointed for a term of 4 years and shall hold office until a successor has been appointed and qualified. And then after that period, we would insert language: the member shall not automatically be removed from the council in midterm should the member's industry withdraw from the
program. Okay, there's the heart of the bill, and I'm sorry. The other maybe is just really technical language that's legally equivalent, but it's a kind of a cleanup.
Right.
And the heart is down on 16 and 17. Okay, thank you.
I just have a few questions, too. It looks like the changes that were made is in the original bill, the people had to be actively participating that were representatives. And it looks like the amendments that were made, the for which refers to the trades or the crafts.
That's right.
So it doesn't necessarily mean that they have to be active members, is that correct?
Well, the intention is that they be active members of the trade or the craft being being approved. So that we are getting people on the apprenticeship council that are actively engaged in apprenticeship.
I agree with the chairman.
I think the language does that.
Language does that.
The other question, council, that are knowledgeable and know what apprenticeships are all, I am a little bit concerned, though, in view of the past and present underrepresentation of women and minorities in those programs, if this will have the net effect of making it impossible for women and minorities to serve, because you won't find people, I suppose you sell the public members, but have you thought about that in terms of...
We have thought about it, and I can only relate to the apprentice program. And in 1980, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers and NECA received statewide recognition for including minorities and women in the program. And I cannot speak for the other trades, but I know in our particular trade we do certainly actively recruit minorities and women.
Well, will this have the effect of changing the present membership on the council? Will some people lose their positions?
I don't think it will, but I would assume that after the appointments are made again, it could have a change on the council.
How many women and minorities are on there now, do you know?
That I do not know.
Maybe we could get that information from the Bureau of Labor. Well, perhaps, Senator Brown.
Going back, Glenn, if you go to line 7, current language says two members who are actively participating, who must relate back to the people, the two members. The way it's now going to be changed, it will be two members representing crafts for which programs are approved. So it would not appear that those members themselves have any active participation. Rather, the craft has some active participation.
Right.
So that means there's no requirement that the individual himself have any special background or participation, but rather that the craft be somehow involved. And maybe that will meet your need, but it does
change the
it
focus.
Does change the participatory background or qualifications of the individual.
Well, what we've found in the past. I'm not saying this is the plum of the governor's appointments by any means, but what we have found in the past that people have been on the Joint Apprenticeship and Training Council that have very little knowledge of apprenticeship and are not coming from trades or professions that are normally apprenticeable.
Yeah. Well, this would ensure that they come from a craft that's apprenticeable,
right.
But it would not ensure, as the current law does, that they themselves personally have any participatory background.
Right.
I'm sure the governor's not going to put someone on who is a greenhorn to the program. But
we want people on the council that are knowledgeable in apprenticeship and coming from a craft or a trade that is apprenticeable,
right.
Whether they be carpenters, electricians, plumbers, or whatever.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
Any further questions for Representative Otto? I know he has a committee that he's going to get back to.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anybody else? We don't have anyone else signed up to testify in 2418. Is there anyone that wishes to testify?
In view of the lateness of the hour, Madam Chairman, I'll move that we send this out to pass.
Senator Brown moves House Bill 2418 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Not, clerk, call the roll.
Senator Hannan. Senator Houck.
Aye.
Senator Kitzhaber.
Aye.
Senator McCoy. Senator Wires. Senator Brown.
Aye.
Senator Hendrickson.
Aye. Senator Brown, do you want to carry the bill?
Right.
Okay. We're going to go to House Bill 2651, and have Bill Cross sign it to testify.
How you doing?
record, my name is Bill Cross with the Oregon Restaurant and Beverage Association. 2651 modifies the requirement for filing the timing of the filing of the joint declaration with regard to the independent contractor. And we became involved in this issue when one of the insurance carriers required that a joint declaration be filed prior to the engaging of musicians. And so some of the operators who had a contract with the musicians, and oftentimes the musicians would come in on a Friday afternoon for a Friday night and Saturday night, weekend engagement, and that would be the first opportunity to sign the contract indicating that they were going to take care of their own workers' comp, unemployment, and other taxes and report requirements. And the operator was being required then to somehow get that to the insurance carrier prior to the conclusion of that business day. So this simply puts in a new sentence that would allow that joint declaration, if otherwise valid and assigned prior to the commencement of the work, to be actually delivered to the carrier within 15 days thereafter. So the contract would still have to be signed and the joint declarations would have to be in effect prior to the actual engagement of the independent contractor, but it would allow then a 15-day period during which to deliver that to the carrier or to mail it to them, whatever. And that basically is what the bill does, and it would work for, I guess that's the main situation where we've become involved with it. I believe on the House side, we were the only group that actually had experienced a problem of this nature.
And there was no opposition to it?
No.
Okay, any questions, witness?
Madam Chairman, let's see. I have a mock-up here, and it's a very long sentence, but maybe there's a capital T should be reduced to the lowercase. It says, if the insurer determines special circumstances precludes filing, comma, the joint. That should be a small t. The joint declaration is valid and effective if signed prior to. Okay. That's it.
Any further questions, the witness? Thank you. Is there anybody else wishing to testify on 2651? We don't have anybody else signed up. Now we're going to close the public hearing on 2651. Senator Hanby is here for 2653, and why don't I call open the public hearing on 2653 and go ahead and come forward.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. For the record, I'm Jeanette Hanby, Senate District 5, and I'd like to introduce to you a constituent of mine, William Brown, who is president of Squire Electronics. He brings to the committee's attention a problem and a very valid concern dealing with voluntary quits and employees that are terminated for cause and the impact they have on an employer's unemployment insurance. Mr. Brown.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate the opportunity to come and talk to you. Basically, the situation has occurred, I've seen it happen in other companies, it has happened in ours, where we have people who terminate either voluntarily or are terminated for cause. Later on, they go out and are reemployed, which is fine, and if they are at that time terminated involuntarily, in other words, not for their own reason, and they go and draw unemployment, the charges against the individual employment funds that the companies have, the charge comes back to the base year employees, even though they were terminated with cause. There's no opportunity for a hearing at that point. So we had a situation occur where one person was terminated for cause after 3 months. She was reemployed at another company for about a month or two, was terminated, was laid off, applied for unemployment. We were notified our account would be charged, and there was nothing we could do about it. And we really felt that that was a little bit unfair.
Okay, it seems to me, I was talking to Cheyenne, didn't the committee try to address this issue before? Because I thought you'd referred Mr. Brown's letter. Was that a different constituent problem? I guess what I thought there was some kind of technical problem. I mean, we all sympathize with your situation in terms of how we can amend the law. I guess we'll have to wait to hear from the division. You do have some amendments.
Yes, there are amendments attached, as well as a letter signed by Ray Thorne on noting the problem. The problem, of course, is that there would be a slight increase because of the pooling.
Increase in the other employers?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What would be the slight increase of?
Okay, my understanding is because there would be more challenges, there would have to be more hearings and determinations made as to whether the person was terminated for cause or involuntarily terminated.
You mean because the loss of employment with the second employer might be under circumstances that would preclude unemployment insurance because the person would only have that particular second period that would serve as the only basis or qualification? And then they would question the...
Okay. Now, let's say in the case of the second employer, the person is simply laid off. There's lack of work. The person is laid off, obviously qualifies for unemployment. The problem is they go back to the base year employers, and they charge the accounts of the base year employers for the unemployment compensation drawn. And some of the employers in the base year may not have been responsible for an unjust termination.
They don't look at the, they go back to the first employer, they don't look at the reasons why
the reasons.
Person left.
Right, at that point,
employer.
There is no looking at reasons.
I see, that's what this bill addresses, but some
yes.
discussion that there would be more appeals if this bill passed.
And so it would increase the cost.
And the appeals would be because of the character of the second termination.
The termination from the first company.
If that's eliminated, if that basis is eliminated and it's only the second employment that is concerned, why would the first employer be penalizing?
Because his account is charged when the person draws unemployment.
At a later date, maybe.
At a later date, right. Mm-hmm.
Even though the employee has had subsequent employment since leaving the first employer. Senator Brown, if you notice Mr. Brown's letter beginning, well, Oregon, you did it to us poor small business people again, and it's attached as an exhibit.
Well, I'm not sure if without being too partisan, this may have been passed during 10 or 20 years ago during the administration of another party. No, I mean, I think it would be very interesting because I do take slight umbrage about who does what to whom, and it would be interesting if we find out when this law was passed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure before any of us were here.
Well, you know, I have to say that I am kind of very much in favor of the way unemployment works right now, where there is some responsibility on the employer's part that if they terminate unjustly, then indeed their rates do go up. And I think that's really neat. I really do. That gives the employer a real strong incentive to be careful about why they're terminating people, not just to hire them for a couple weeks or a couple months to get a big job out and then terminate them again, because it does affect them in the long run. And that system, I think, is good.
Mr. Brown, do you know how will this affect the person getting benefits then? If they do have you fired them, they get a job, and they are laid off from the second employer, will they then be able to draw benefits from the second employer?
Yes.
Will they be charged to, they won't have a long period of eligibility, or?
No, as I understand, the compensation that they get is based upon the base year employment salary, okay? That's fixed, and no way is that changing by what we're doing here.
It's just who gets charged.
Yeah, it's just who gets charged. It has no effect on how much money they get
the
or anything like that.
Or the
right.
person.
Right. The person was laid off, and he deserves the benefits. That's what the law says.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The problem is how it's charged back to the employer's account.
There were two employers in this situation.
Let's say employer A is the first employer, and employer B is the second.
Okay. Now, in this situation, did you get charged for the whole thing or half of it?
Okay, I got the charges prorated according to what your total
contribution
to her salary was during the base year, that person's salary.
She gets no more, but it just a question as to where the money comes.
Right.
She gets no more.
Right. There's no more, no less. There's no argument as to what the person gets as a benefit. The problem is how it's charged back.
I thought maybe it would take 20 weeks of qualification, and maybe she would have gotten half of the first job and half of the second job, and if the first job didn't count, then it wouldn't be enough on the second job.
No, that as I understand, has no effect on it.
Okay, so this question is coming out of your reserve account or something.
Right, if it's
so
charged to
her. So I guess what
Mr.
Brown is saying, too, is that you can be a good employer and be careful about how you terminate people,
right.
And you're going to be pooled with employers that may not...
Exactly.
Be as careful about their termination, and they can affect your rates.
Yeah.
And that's beyond your control as an employer.
Very much
so. In terms
so.
Of how you're watching your discharge process.
Yeah. Literally, if a person voluntarily terminates, re-employs at another company, is laid off, they're going to be eligible for unemployment, and it is chargeable at that point to you, and you have no recourse.
But even the second employer who lays off for cause becomes somehow liable for unemployment compensation after a certain period of time.
Very definitely.
So the notion is that if you employ a crook, you're still going to have to pay ultimately some contribution. And apparently, it's the way the system works.
No, that's the way the system works now.
Yeah, for the second employer even.
Yeah, in the case of the second employer, if he justly terminates the person.
Doesn't that person get compensation after a longer waiting period?
My understanding is if a person is justly terminated,
yes.
And I don't know the details, they are no longer eligible for unemployment.
That's not my understanding.
No.
Okay. If they voluntarily terminate, they're no longer eligible for unemployment.
I think that's also...
Well, there's a waiting period and a process
they
have to go
through. The waiting period.
Yes, if they quit voluntarily or they're thrown out as a thief...
Mm-hmm.
And they ultimately do get some compensation, but it's a little longer. They have to wait longer. But if they're let off because of no fault of their own,
okay. I may be wrong, but I thought the last
I think they have to get a new job first. We'll probably have to
yeah,
someone from the employment
re-qualification
service
period.
Explain this rather. I think there's a very elaborate process they have to go through as a result of legislation last session. If they quit, they have to. I think they have to get a job and
they
work so long
be,
before
they... Yeah, re-employed and earn 4 weekly earnings
equivalent. In other words, you have to be
equivalent.
Employed before you can get unemployment.
If you voluntarily terminate, yes, or terminated for certain causes, yes,
yeah.
You do have to be re-employed
think,
before you
I
get
think,
unemployment.
Yeah.
And that's an existing law, and this doesn't change that.
So yours is... Okay, so your amendments that are Senator Hamby is proposing would sort of hold that first employer harmless if they... had a good reason to terminate someone.
It would allow them the opportunity to have a hearing to determine if they were to be held harmless or not.
Okay.
And that
so
there'd
be a fact hearing on what the
right.
Term... Right now, it's just assumed that you're liable.
Yeah, you're assumed guilty.
Okay, well, we will
anyway.
See what we can do. We'll look... you know, we did look into this once before, I thought. And I don't
I
know if it was
early,
the
early
fiscal
the
impact on the fund that... was a deterrent to us, but we will try and see what we can do.
In the words of the law, you want to be held harmless, and I'm going to find out how when this law was passed, and then you can hold Senator Hamby harmless.
If we are truly not guilty of causing a problem, then yes, I would like to be held harmless.
Well, we also like to hold the legislator, as you wrote here, harmless. Because right now it looks like she got pilloried in the local press, copied to the local press.
No, the original letter that went to the local press was the Well, Oregon, you've done it again to a small businessman.
Addressed to Senator Hamby.
A copy to Senator Hamby.
The original.
I don't know
Hamby.
Who was holding
okay.
Senator Hamby responsible. I think he was hoping she'd be able to help him.
Yes.
Right, so.
Full strength.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Now we have some people that want to testify on the main body of the bill.
Church.
Okay. Nancy Zirkel, who has come all the way from Sisters, Oregon.
What
morning.
Body are we talking about?
Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to come. I'm Nancy Zirkel. I have a small business in Sisters, Oregon, and am highly interested in this bill and its amendments.
Are you here to testify on Senator Hamby's amendment or on the original?
On the original.
Okay.
And it infests one of the amendments, too, that has to do with the date.
Okay.
Of the re-evaluation.
We have some House amendments.
Yes,
right.
The House amendments.
Okay.
That's the one I'm interested in.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Briefly, I have come to you as an aggrieved citizen seeking a correction from the legislature for an injustice that's been done to me by the unemployment people.
So maybe, were you the one that sort of was inspiration for this bill? I know Senator Representative
so.
Troop.
Yes, I think so. I called him up and had hysterics on the phone when this happened to me, and he was quite upset to find that it was happening, and said he would try to help correct the situation. I will summarize it briefly. In April 79, I opened my store, The Cook's Nook. Because I was an unknown employer, I was given a high rate of 3.5%. In 80 and 81, through the next 2.5 years, I did not lay anyone off, and my rate came down slowly to 3.3. Finally, after 3 years, in 1982, my rate was reduced to 2%. This is because I had laid no one off, ever, and I had earned this rate. This is the rate that I deserve. In October of 1981, another store in Sisters closed. Mrs. Stewart, who works for me one day a week, regularly, worked for that store 2 days a week. Since her work week had been reduced, she correctly applied for unemployment benefits. She continued to work for me 1 day a week as before. There was no change. I did not lay anyone off. However, I received notice that my account was to be charged. I protested this as vigorously as possible. I had laid no one off, and the benefits are a ratio based on your layoffs. Therefore, I told them you couldn't possibly do this. It's wrong. They said it might be unfair and it might be wrong, but they were going to do it anyway. And I talked to the main office in Salem, and he repeated that it was unfortunate, but it was going to happen. And I called my representative, Tom Troop, and I told him that the state of Oregon was going to steal from me legally. And he was surprised. He said he would try to help me if this happened. Now, this was early 82. I knew it was going to happen. I told him it was going to happen. On 11/15/82, I received the notice.
I was just going to ask you, Mr. Zirkle, I guess this is kind of a variation of the problem that Mr. Brown was talking about, in the sense that you get impacted as the first employer.
I am one of a number of part-time employers in this case.
Oh, I see.
Uh-huh. This lady is a full-time, part-time employee. We have the type of businesses we have in Sisters are small, owner run. I am paying someone every time I come over here to run it for me.
Because you work in your business normally.
Certainly. I am the business. There's no one else. My husband helps me. I do everything. I sweep the floors. I run the store. And so I can have a day off, I hire Mrs. Stewart to work for me 1 day a week. We're open 7 days a week in Sisters. So my rate came last fall. It was 3.7%. That's an 85% increase. This is higher than when I was an unknown employee. Now I am a bad employee. I have been found to be a bad employer, and I have not laid anyone off in the 4 years that I have run the business, not one person. 3 years it took me to earn a true rate of 2%, and I lost it in 1 day. And I'd like to say that Mrs. Stewart's unemployment benefits are not an issue here. She was entitled to them, she drew them, and if this change is made, she would still have drawn exactly the same amount. It's only a matter of who is charged for these. Oregon State is trying to encourage business. Small businesses provide jobs, and things like this cannot be allowed to happen. I realize that laws cannot be passed retroactively, and I am going to be responsible for paying these exorbitant taxes for 1983. But the House amendment to the bill that was prepared by the unemployment department, it notes here, I'm looking at a staff summary of this because the bill is very difficult to read. The rates based on charges after June 30, 1982 can be recomputed. Now, this date was given to the House staff by the unemployment people, and they were told that this date would correct my problem and the people on the immediate past year.
Mm-hmm.
This is not true.
What would correct your problem? What date?
1981.
June 30th or what?
1981 would correct it. I guess they want June 30th because, I don't know, it's a
fiscal
year. That's
their fiscal year.
Yes. See, my charges were in the first 6 months of 82. So when they said this would correct the immediate past year, the people who now got their rate increases in December, that was not true. The unemployment department, I understand, has said they cannot, will not, won't, I don't know, do 1981. My understanding is that the Senate of this state is running this state, and you have been elected to make the laws to fairly treat the citizens of this state. And I absolutely believe in the American system, and I am here because, and I spent a year because I believe you can operate in the system and correct an injustice. Now, I feel that the Senate should do the right thing and tell the employees and the Bureau of Unemployment to do it, period. And that's what I asked you to
do. Do you know what reason they gave why they couldn't use
the data? Oh, well, they would have to.
Cost too much money.
Oh, they can't recompute the computer. I mean, you know how they are. They can't. It's going to cost a fortune. We can't do the computer. Heavens above, the computer runs the Bureau. And I reject this. I reject this out of hand. There are people and sisters that say, A, I am a damn fool to be paying all these taxes. There are a lot of people that don't, small businesses that pay under the table. I want to pay my taxes. I want to pay fair taxes. I want to pay what I owe. And I want my rate of 2% back. And I guess basically that's why I'm here.